Hi, everybody. As Carlos said, my name is Ted Kerr from Visual Aids. Thank you so much for coming. We want to thank the New Museum for being such an amazing host to have these conversations. Thank you to Ryan, Travis, and Angie for being gracious and lovely and accommodating. Thank you to Carlos for creating We Who Feel Differently. It's awesome to have this umbrella under which we can gather and talk and feel safe and be dry, so that's awesome. Thank you, Queerocracy. It has been such a pleasure for Visual Aids to discover you guys. It's been really awesome, and thank you to my colleagues at Visual Aids. This is going to be totally informal. We are all various stages of informal, nervous, out of sorts, busy, and tired, and excited. So feel free to feel that and also be that way as well. What we're going to do tonight is we are going to try, in less than 90 minutes, talk about 30 years of AIDS activism, the present, and the future. That is impossible, but what we're going to try to do is incorporate as many voices as we can, and that includes your voices. So there's going to be lots of time for you guys to get to know each other and hear what each other has to say. So we're going to start with a performance that is choreographed by us. Very exciting. Are you nervous? Then we are going to talk about what does AIDS mean now, and that will be a fun conversation. And then we're going to do some skill sharing so that when you leave here tonight, you actually have some skills that if you want to be, you know, the most, you know, strident activist you know is inside of you, you'll be able to do that. First, I think it's always great to just acknowledge that we are a community of the living and the dead. We're all in this together. And if at any point you need to take a break, you need to leave, that's totally cool. Is everyone on this boat with us together?
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you. What happens first?
Cassidy takes over.
All right. So I'll claim the title of nervous, but I'll do my best. So we wanted to start off our event today by mapping out a history of AIDS through the voices of people that are known either by the general public, by their own communities, by very few and by very many. We wanted to acknowledge their brutal truths, their bravery, and their perceptions on what AIDS is, what it isn't, what AIDS activism is. AIDS activism is to them, and the many intersecting issues and injustices that have led us into over 30 years of AIDS. So let us begin, and let us listen closely to each other.
Our government has made bold statements of it now being U.S. policy to ensure that the next generation of AIDS is free. We have a long way to go before it can be seen like that. We need scaled-up treatment targets. We need shelters for our homeless queer youth. We need to remove the federal ban on needle exchange. We need stigma. We need big pharmacies to stop the attack on generic production in developing countries, and the U.S. to stop backing them up. We need to stop detaining and deporting our undocumented kin. We need resources to be poured into sex education for our youth. We need states to stop criminalizing people for non-disclosure when there is no harm being caused. We need states like New York to stop using condoms as evidence of prostitution and to start using evidence as prevention. We need to change the way our society views those of us who are positive.
We don't want to sew, we don't want to knit, we don't want to cook. We want better work conditions. We want sex work to be recognized as work. We want to be free to do, free to make mistakes, and free to learn. Free to decide what we as sex workers need. Free from repression. This is the best way to build an effective response to the HIV/AIDS epidemic. Sex workers are not the problem. We are part of the solution.
A friend of mine in New York City has a half-fare transit card, which means that you get on buses and subways for half price. And the other day when he showed his card to the token attendant, the attendant asked what his disability was, and he said, "I have AIDS." And the attendant said, No, you don't. If you had AIDS, you'd be home dying. And so I wanted to speak out today as a person with AIDS who is not dying.
You know, for the last 3 years since I was diagnosed, my family thinks two things about my situation. One, they think I'm going to die. And two, they think that my government is doing absolutely everything in their power to stop that. And they're wrong on both counts.
So if I'm dying from anything, I'm dying from homophobia. If I'm dying from anything, I'm dying from racism. If I'm dying from anything, it's from indifference and red tape, because these are the things that are preventing an end to this crisis. If I'm dying from anything, I'm dying from Jesse Helms. If I'm dying from anything, I'm dying from the President of the United States. And especially if I'm dying from anything, I'm dying from the sensationalism of newspapers and magazines and television shows which are interested in me as a human interest story, only as long as I'm willing to be a helpless victim, but not if I'm fighting for my life.
You're all going to be dead in 6 months. Now, what are we going to do about it?
I am someone with AIDS, and I want to live by any means necessary.
I am not dying. I am being murdered. Just as surely as if my body was being tossed into a gas chamber, I'm being sold down the river by people within this community who claim to be helping people with AIDS. Hang your heads in shame while I point my finger at you.
All you saw was people getting beat up, the blood flying all over the place, the horror of it all. But the most beautiful part of it all was that we kept coming back for more. We didn't stop. We weren't afraid. We didn't care if we died. We were not going to be oppressed anymore. And I am glad that I was there. I was glad of that to this day, even though the gay community does not respect what I and the other transgender people had done to liberate every gay person and every diverse person in the world. If it was not for the people of that evening of my era, the drag queens, there would be no gay liberation for nobody. There would be no liberation for anybody.
It was 1993. 3 years before the advent of effective HIV combo therapy, and our AIDS education and support group wanted to make a panel, using our grief and rage to fuel our very uneven artistic and sewing skills. We had lost so many family and friends, both inside the walls and beyond. For the sister prisoners we had lost, women whom we had held and tried to comfort as they suffered, not only painful deaths, but also the loneliness of rejection by family and the hatred of prison officials. We wanted their names to be remembered, their lives recognized. And who besides prisoners would stitch into collective memory the names of our incarcerated sisters, already nameless and faceless to the larger society? We also wanted to honor the family and friends outside prison who had died, as we had not been able to do with our presence during their passing. We wept as we listed the names, sometimes admitting for the first time aloud that a relative had been hit by this seemingly relentless plague.
Clearly, if we as African countries had the level of development to enable us to gather accurate statistics about our own countries, our morbidity and mortality figures would tell a story that would truly be too frightening to contemplate. As I listened and heard the whole story about our own country, it seemed to me that we could not blame everything on a single virus. It seemed to me also that every living African, whether in good or ill health, is prey to many enemies of health that would interact one upon the other in many ways within one human body. And thus, I came to conclude that we have a desperate and pressing need to wage a war on all fronts to guarantee and realize the human right of all our people to good health.
I'm tired from tops who believe they can't contract HIV. I'm tired from bottoms who continue to roll the dice. I'm tired from irresponsible HIV-positive barebackers. I'm tired from irresponsible HIV-negative barebackers. I'm tired of the belief that barebackers are always gay men. I'm tired because it ain't true. I'm tired of condoms. I'm tired for everyone waiting for the results to come back from an HIV test. I'm tired.
I'm tired of incompetent negatives. I'm tired of unqualified positives. I'm tired of bureaucracy. I'm tired of cynics. I'm tired of the hypocrites. I'm tired of the dishonesty. I'm tired because I don't know what to do. I'm tired of being stressed, depressed, and overwhelmed. I'm tired because I don't have time to do more. I'm tired because I don't feel like doing more. I'm tired.
I'm tired of grieving. I'm tired of remembering. I'm tired of wondering. I'm tired that I still grieve the death of Antonio, who died 15 years ago on October 8th. I'm tired of marking the anniversary of his death. I'm tired of wondering of what might have been. I'm tired of hoping. I'm tired of coping. I'm tired of dates that always remind me of how tired I am. I'm tired of wondering what's next, who's next. I'm tired of this road.
I'm just tired.
I am a walking STD. I worry that friends will slowly become professional pallbearers, waiting for each death of their lovers, friends, and neighbors, and polishing their funeral speeches, perfecting their rituals of death rather than a relatively simple ritual of life, such as screaming in the streets.
As an AIDS activist and educator, I've also spent some years trying to play all sides of the fence. Sometimes I work with government officials. Sometimes I get arrested for demonstrating during Mass in St. Patrick's Cathedral. And then this year, I'm running for Vice President of the United States with the Independent AIDS Cure Packet ticket, headed by the stunning Steve Michael. How else are AIDS issues going to be raised in the presidential campaign?
We need to unite. How can we expect for the larger society to accept us when we're still like, ooh, girl, did you see her? Ooh, girl, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it's all this drama in our community. We need to let all go behind and just embrace one another. And most importantly, we need to love one another.
And now I want us all to collectively say the last line. Ready? For all the PWAs. Thank you.
Everyone's doing great so far. Thank you for that. So we got to hear, as you'll see on the back of that sheet, it gives you the names of the people who said those words originally. So that's for you to keep, and feel free to Google and learn more. So we got to hear some other people's thoughts about HIV/AIDS from the past, and now we want to talk to each other about what AIDS means to us now. And one thing that's really important, and one of the reasons why we're here tonight, is because we can't just assume we know what people mean when they say AIDS. It's a complicated, multifaceted thing, and everyone has a handout, and it says AIDS is, and that's for you guys to keep and read, and while we're gathered here tonight, take a look at that, and we're gonna pass out some pens, and just start to, and some post-its with the AIDS is on it, and take the next 5 minutes and just write down what AIDS is to you, and don't worry about being politically correct, don't worry about making sense, don't worry about it being readable, don't worry about sharing, just like, finish the sentence, AIDS is, and leaving it blank is one response. So I'm going to be quiet now, and we're gonna have 5 minutes of just writing. Feel free to talk to your neighbor, though, and then I'll explain what's next. Okay, so this is what's gonna happen. We have 10 minutes in our groups. And the only two things that have to happen in the 10 minutes is everyone who wants to has to share what they wrote on their sticky, and the group leader or whomever has to be willing to share some of the things that were talked about in your group at the end of the 10 minutes. And I lied, there's three things. So the first thing is you guys have to discuss if you want to discuss. Someone has to be responsible for sharing those to the larger group afterwards. And then the third thing is We want to get all the Post-its on this wall by the end of the 10 minutes. Does that sound good to everyone? Yeah? Okay, so 10 minutes. Feel free to, like, if you guys need to get into another corner to talk and stuff like that, feel free. So 10 minutes to talk. Thank you. So on purpose, we tried not to be clear about this activity. On purpose, we wanted to make sure that the conversation was confusing and scattered, and we didn't want to define anything. Oh, hugging. And that was important. So I guess let's just do this fun thing where, like, raise your hand if you were conflicted about trying to put what AIDS is on a Post-it. Raise your hand if you felt when people spoke, your mind actually opened up more and you wanted to write more. Raise your hand if AIDS brings up more than one feeling inside of you. Okay. So raise your hand if it brings up more than two feelings inside of you. Okay. So you know how this goes, right? Okay. And the last one, raise your hand if it brings up more than 5,000 things inside of you. Yeah. Okay. So in the pursuit of time or in respect of time, we are going to do some editing here. And instead of doing group report back, we're going to do some vocal therapy. And on the count of three, we're all going to answer what AIDS is. And some of you are going to be very quiet, and I like that. Some of you are going to be silent, that's fine. Some of you are going to be really loud, and that's awesome. Some of you are going to just be normal voice. I'm going to move my microphone away from my mouth when I say what AIDS is to me, so it's not annoying. So on the count of three, AIDS is, okay? One, two, three. Confusing!
Paying my rent.
Awesome. We're going to do it again. Is that all right with everyone? Yeah? Okay. And we're going to do it to the count of three again. You can say the same thing that you said before, or you can switch it up. You can hear. You can repeat what someone else said because you thought it was awesome. Okay? Okay, so AIDS is one, two, three.
David.
Great. Thank you so much. We are going to move on now. Thanks.
So, one of the importances of this particular panel is because it happens to come right before a very, very important event slash conference that I'm completely excited about, the International AIDS Conference. That's right, whoever did that, yeah! The International AIDS Conference hasn't been in the United States in over 22 years, and that's mainly due to a travel ban on HIV travel. Of positive bodies, which was lifted in 2009 by President Obama. Good job, Barack. I'm particularly excited because this conference, which happens every 2 years, brings together over 30,000 activists, world leaders, scientists, people affected and infected by AIDS, and of course, the money-hungry corporations that live off of them. And, you know, the way I see it, out of those 30,000, I mean, about 1,000 of them have to be cuties, so I'm pretty stoked.
So, Queerocracy and Visual AIDS are both supporting organizations of a massive and historic mobilization that's taking place on July 24th, which is this coming Tuesday, and it's called the We Can End AIDS Mobilization. Obviously, this is a really historic moment for AIDS. This conference hasn't been in the United States for 22 years. We've recently had huge announcements from major political figures in this country. Both the President and Secretary Clinton made huge public announcements regarding hopeful progress in ending AIDS. And something that I like to call the best kept secret in terms of AIDS, and that's, I want to tell you all because I don't want it to be a secret. I want you to go out of here and I want you to tell everyone you know, is that we actually seriously can end AIDS. And we've been saying it since the beginning because that's the hope and it's been part of our rhetoric and it really is true. Scientific studies show that treatment equals prevention and that if we have the political will and that if we put policy behind the science and behind the rhetoric, we actually can see the end of AIDS in my lifetime, so.
July 24th, The streets of DC will be filled with thousands and thousands of people. The weekend and AIDS mobilization is approaching. Now, this is not your grandmother's run-of-the-mill march. No, not now, not ever. There are five arms of this march, which I am particularly excited about. One of the arms, and they're all focusing on different issues, realizing that AIDS is something extremely complicated. In order to tackle something so vast and complicated, you have to talk about all the different factors that make it such an interesting thing. So one of the arms focuses on sound policies, realizing that policies drive a lot of funding streams within our country, both domestically and internationally. Whether you're looking at the Global Fund for TB, Malaria, and HIV, and the fact that it was on a pause for a few months is kind of devastating. Even our trade laws are also terrible. Well, not all terrible, but they can also affect this pandemic. Particularly an example of that is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is the largest free trade agreement ever negotiated by the United States. It's currently being negotiated. The next round is actually in September in Virginia, so if anyone wants to come down and protest, you can so send me an email. But the Trans-Pacific Partnership particularly has, it's a free trade agreement of nine different countries, and recently I think Canada and Mexico have been invited into it. And it's a scary thing when you talk about HIV and AIDS, because on a global level, 80% of the population of HIV and AIDS infected people rely on the production of generic medications in order to survive. And a lot of the countries that are involved in this agreement have the potential to create generic drugs, such as Vietnam and Malaysia. Now, within this free trade agreement are specific provisions which will lengthen intellectual property rights for pharmaceutical companies. That's a scary thing. A lot of these drugs are coming at the end of their rope, and the last thing they want to do is allow generic drugs to compete. And then a second arm of the march is a focus on pharma and corporate greed. Pharma has an agenda to create more profit off the lives of people that are HIV positive. And they will stop at nothing until they get more money. An example of that is the Swiss pharmaceutical company Novartis. Currently, they are suing the Indian government in the Supreme Court to change their patent laws. Right now, India is one of the largest producers of generic drugs to the global south, and Novartis currently is suing them so that they can basically compete in those markets and basically increase their financial intake. And then a third arm of this march is called the FTT, or the Robin Hood tax. This is a global movement which started 2 years ago, and I love it a lot because I like wearing tights, and green is a cool color. And the premise behind this march is focusing on a need to tax Wall Street to create the revenue we need to see the end of AIDS. Right now, social services are in jeopardy. Programs like HASA in New York are in jeopardy. People are losing housing, and this is something that is serious. And I mean, a lot of talks of austerity are being brought up when you talk to politicians and leaders about increasing funding for AIDS. But we know that the money does exist, and it exists in the financial market. And if we tax the speculative trading that Wall Street does on a regular basis, frequently, we can create over $350 billion annually. That's a lot of money, and we can do a lot with that.
Another of the five branches is the women's branch, and that's focused, you know, on a lot of issues related to sexual health, reproductive rights, limiting mother-to-child transmission. In Uganda, for example, this country has the highest fertility rates, and yet every day one mother is dying because of HIV-related causes. Another branch of the march, the fifth branch, is the human rights and harm reduction branch, and that's actually what both Queerocracy and Visual AIDS will be marching in. This focuses on so many things, and you could probably imagine 15 more things that we don't even have listed under the branch, but a few examples are HIV criminalization, which Queerocracy focuses our messaging on for the march. Mass incarceration, an end to mass incarceration, rather, and lifting of the ban on harm reduction programs and syringe exchange. So we want to invite everyone in this room to join us We're sending free buses down to DC for a one-day turnaround trip. Now that you've heard about all the things that are involved in this mobilization, we want to invite you to join us for free. We're sending two buses from two different locations. I'm gonna pass this around as we move on with the presentation. One bus will be leaving from the LGBT Center in Manhattan. One bus will be leaving from the offices of GMAD, Gay Men of African Descent, in Brooklyn. And if you sign up here, we can send you information. Even if you're just interested and you don't know 100%, please sign up. We'll be leaving the New York area at 6 a.m. and leaving D.C. at 3:30 p.m., so returning around 8 or 9 at night. So take off one day from work, skip your summer classes, do whatever you have to do.
Call in sick.
But we really hope you'll join us, because we can end AIDS.
All right, we'll see if I'm a little less nervous now. No guarantees. But we wanted to, before you all left, sort of teach you one of the activist tactics that we like to use often. So I don't know if anybody here knows what bird dogging is. So obviously it has nothing to do with animals. But it does have everything to do with grassroots power. I was going to see if anyone knew first. But
oh, sorry. You still have a chance.
All right. So for some of you non-cheaters, anybody know what bird dogging is? All right, so I'll give my long-winded definition. Okay, so bird dogging is the name given to the activist tactic of attending public appearances in order to win new policies from politicians. So really putting politicians on the spot, which is always really important to do, and they really hate it. So this direct interaction between activists and decision makers rarely happens in Washington, and it's easy to have a big impact. Just through the simple act of bringing a few of your friends or more people that are interested in activism, like you, depending on the issue that you're trying to get across, and working together to raise your hands, ask questions that hopefully provoke an answer from the target politician. Hoping to get a promise out of them. So how to bird dog. So these are sort of the six steps that we came up with. So one, to pick a target, find opportunities, choose an issue, form a question, strategize, and follow up.
After picking a target, It's really important to focus specifically on the level of power that the target has. So if you're going for local issues, and we're going to use HIV and AIDS as an example, a local example of that would be focusing on an individual such as Robert Doerr, who has a lot of power and authority over the policies that affect HASA, which is housing and financial support for people living with HIV and AIDS. On a state level, congressional reps and senators are very important people because they do sign on to bills that affect people's lives directly. And on a national level, the president, the commander in chief, should I say more? And so these opportunities are sometimes they're easy to find, sometimes they're difficult. It's a full-time job in itself, and so there are different ways to find out where these officials are going to be. One way is to sign up for listservs. There are a lot of listservs out there, and I'm sure people know how terrible listservs can be. But some of them are good, and they will inform you, particularly of where a lot of these officials are going to be. They try to hide that from you because they know activists exist, and they don't want you ruining their fundraisers. But it's always also good to. I sometimes donate a dollar just so I can get on their fundraising list and then chase after them. And also, just knowing people also, it's really important to keep friendships going because eventually one of your friends might be working for someone and they can get you in somewhere. So choosing an issue, there's different issues, of course, you should focus on. But the thing is, your opportunity is going to be very short and very quick and brief. And so it's very important to go directly to that issue in your question. You won't be given much time. So whether that be funding, fully funding for the Global Fund or PEPFAR, or policies, lift the ban on syringe exchange, and rights. you're not given a very long time to speak, usually in these situations, so if you're going to do it, go straight for the goal.
So forming a question. We've just got some guidelines for this, and really this can depend on what your issue is, who your target is, what kind of event you're at, but a few standards. And you also have a handout that's included, the only one we haven't really looked at yet. You're welcome to look at it while we're speaking, but it's also something that you can take away with you and you can reference if and when you choose to practice bird dogging. So a good question is about 10 to 20 seconds long. Like Mike said, you don't always have a lot of time to speak. It's constructed like a short narrative. So first, you state a problem. You express your personal interest in this issue, in this problem. You provide a solution, and then you provide a demand. And then a good question would be concluded with a question. So sometimes, depending on your goals, this would be a closed-ended question where the target would need to provide a yes or no answer. Other times, you might ask an open-ended question if you're sort of demanding more of someone who's already made steps towards what it is that you're discussing. Some tips for your question. Include the answer to the question within the question. And we have a sample question coming up, so that will clarify some of these things that I'm rambling through for you. reference. Sometimes it's useful to reference your candidate's opponent, especially in election season. If you mention that the target's opponent has done something that doesn't fall in line with your issue and what you're sort of standing with, it really puts them in a position where they have to take the opposite side. And then find and use supporting facts and or citations. Sounding like you know what you're talking about is really useful and sometimes throws politicians off, and also sometimes really forces them to come back with an answer that works for you. So a sample question. Senator Gillibrand, I'm 23 years old and I'm directly affected by HIV. Thank you so much for supporting the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, TB, and Malaria. However, the senator has recently proposed cutting $3.9 billion from the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief. This in addition to the cuts from last year. We know that we need full funding in order to end AIDS in my lifetime. What will you do to restore these cuts and to continue being a champion in the fight to end AIDS? So the next step in the bird dogging process is strategizing. Strategy is very important in having a successful bird dogging session. So first, you need to find out how you'll get into an event. Mike kind of suggested a couple of possibilities for this. This takes planning sometimes. Sometimes you can figure it out the morning that you find out there's an event in your city. We've, in the past, posed as press. People know people who get them in. There are a lot of different ways to work it out, but it is something you need to think about. First, fast, and high is a quick and easy way to remember how you can be seen. So this is often, this is kind of referencing when there's a Q&A portion at a fundraiser or at a speech. So first, get your hand up first, get your hand up high, and get your hand up fast. Placement in audience can also be really important. Getting to the front can be really helpful. Also, if you have more, hopefully you'll come into an event with a posse of sorts. So having people situated not necessarily all together can be really useful sometimes. So let's say you ask a question and you don't get the answer you want. They're probably not going to call on the person sitting next to you because they know that you're together and they know you're trying to get this out of them. So splitting up can be useful because someone else in your group might get called on. A follow-up question is kind of what I just referenced. It can be useful, even if you do get the answer you want, it can be useful to have someone to just reiterate. Then people in the audience realize that this is an issue. People realize that more than one person here knows about this issue, and it can really drive it home. Documenting the action is important. Photos, video especially, if you can get someone. You know, fortunately, a lot of us have smartphones that have video capabilities. That's a really easy way to get in and get the document. And then publicizing in real time, Twitter, Facebook, blogs. Even if the media there doesn't pick it up, which we always hope that they will, and we hunt them down after to see that they will. Pushing it out on your own medium is very important as well. So for following up, one really important step is getting the chief of staff's business card, especially if the politician agrees to something, if you've asked them to initiate a letter or to start a conversation among their colleagues or whatever the case may be. Following up with them, hunting them, chasing them down, and keeping up on them to get it done is extremely important. Following up with the event media, so media who's actually there publicizing the event as it goes, reaching out to them and saying, this is who I am, this is where I'm from, this is why I did this, I have photos, I can tell you more. And then again, getting your photos and video and your story out to other media who maybe was not present, and posting what you've documented online. And we're gonna watch a video of some of our friends from the Student Global AIDS Campaign as they bird-dogged Eric Cantor.
When I get older, I will be stronger. They'll call me freedom, just like a waving flag.
1, 2, 3, 4, we support the global force. 1, 2, 3, 4, we support the...
Would everyone who's here with me today please stand up? In 2003, when the Republicans launched the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, they understood that fighting global AIDS was critical to our national security. It was also the right thing to do. But last week, House Republicans cut $1.5 billion from life-saving American global health programs, a reduction that the American Foundation for AIDS Research says will amount to a death sentence for over a million people. Mr. Cantor, this is not who we are. We can't lose our souls and a million lives just to save the average American taxpayer less than 2 pennies a day. Congressman Cantor, here's my question. Will you save a million lives by going to the conference committee when it meets and calling for a full restoration of funding for U.S. global health programs?
We don't have the money. We just don't. But as compassionate, I think, as we all are for your cause, we'll all have to figure out, everybody, about how to do a little bit more with a little bit less.
That's poor. I heard them say, love is the way, love is the answer. That's what they say. But look how they treat us, make us believers. We fight their battles, then they deceive us. Try to control us, they couldn't hold us. Cause we
fund global health. Budget cuts kill. 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 Fund global health.
Healthcare is a human right.
So that's one way to do it.
So now we're kind of going to do our own little town hall. We're going to break into groups, I guess probably around 10 people. And I'm going to give you each a piece of poster board and a marker, and in each of those groups, you're going to sort of try and form your own question. And it can be on really any issue related to AIDS that you would be interested in sort of practicing. And we have our very own politician here tonight, Senator Gillibrand, so be prepared.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for coming. My name is Megan Mulholland, and I'm the Chief of Staff for Senator Gillibrand. We thank you all for coming today, and Senator Gillibrand is extremely excited to address you all, and we'll have a little bit of time for some questions and answers. So if you could all make your ways to your seats, we can get started.
So just pick one person from each of your group to present the question. And we'll start in just a few seconds.
Now presenting Senator Gillibrand.
Thank you. It's such an honor to be here today and to address you in this new museum. You know, if it weren't for your continual support and funding, I wouldn't be where I am today. And thank you. Thank you all. Okay. Are there any questions in the audience that I can take? You, sir, right over there.
Lesbian, transgender individuals, and do you support that in making sure that it is implemented, that it's not just a paper in someone's drawer?
Thank you for that question. You know, over the past few years, I've tried my best, and I think we've successfully done that, in ensuring that the rights of all people are in the forefront of my campaign. That includes women and children as well. And I do believe that we have a lot of work to do, but with your support, we can do a lot more. Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, that gentleman in the back there.
Senator Gillibrand, it's a known fact that used properly, condoms are 99.9% effective in preventing transmission of STDs, including HIV. However, in New York, DC, San Francisco, and other major urban areas, people are being arrested as prostitutes for carrying three or more condoms on their person. What are you actively doing in policy to prevent this kind of profiling from happening?
He brings up a very important point. There are a lot of policies that are currently in place that are absolutely terrible. And if you look at my record, I have done an amazing job at voting against those policies. In fact, some of the policies that I have placed within the past few years have been to assist our people. If you look at my policy to change funding for women, it's been able to ensure that women receive higher pay in New York. And it's important that, you know, throughout Congress, that we continue to fight a lot of those horrible policies that are keeping our people down. Thank you. You, sir, there in the front.
Hi, Senator Gillibrand. The criminalization of sex work directly affects my life. I'm an 18-year-old New Yorker and a sex worker, one among many. The continued criminalization of sex work exposes me and my community to risk of HIV infection and incarceration. What will you do in the Senate to support my community and to decriminalize sex work?
It's a brave young man, and I thank you for speaking up about your life. What will I do in the Senate? Well, one of the things that's really important is reaching across the aisle so that there is open dialogue between the lefts and the right, the Republicans and the Dems, so that we begin to come to an equal playing field and realize that there are ways in which we can come together on certain topics. And I believe one of your topics is something that we can do that on. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There'll be no more questions today.
Thank you.
So we tried to wrap up 30 years of the past, the present, and hopefully the future in less than 90 minutes. Give yourself a round of applause. So if you walk away tonight with any information, here's what we hope you remember. Use history, listen to each other, embrace difference of opinion, have some idea of what your opinion is, act now, use direct action, and talk about HIV/AIDS, especially things that matter the most to you. One idea is to talk about HIV criminalization. So some of you will see you in Washington, some of you will see you on the streets of New York, and some of you will see you, who knows? But thank you very much, and we'll see you again.